If you enjoy the FitCast, please help support the show by going to patreon.com/thefitcast. That's patreon.com/thefitcast. And there you can start supporting this show at just $1 per episode. And you can even cap it at a dollar amount on a per month basis. So if you need to, you can always go at $2 per month total, no matter how many episodes that come out. Going into 2015, it's going to be really important that I get the support of the audience because my schedule is getting real crazy, and you've seen that I've been able to keep the show on a weekly basis thanks to the Patreon supporters. But as time gets shorter and shorter for my free time, I'm going to need more support from the audience to make sure I can just justify the sacrifice of free time to make sure that this show keeps getting produced and sent to you every single week. So thank you to everyone that is supporting the show, and I really hope if you aren't, you go and check out the website. And like I said, it's just a dollar, so you know, hopefully the show is worth that to you. And thank you again to everyone that is out there supporting the show, and I hope you guys have a great rest of the year. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 320. I am Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have on the show someone that I met back, I think it was in 2010 in Arizona at Functional Strength Coach 4 filming. And it's just great to finally talk to you again. And that's Max Shank. Max, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. It's good to talk to you again. It's definitely been a while.
Well, it is. It's so weird looking back on, because I've continued to follow you. I've been continuing to read your stuff and see what you've been doing. Because obviously, you were one of those people that if you've seen Functional Strength Coach 4, Max is actually in the video and stuff. And over the course of that weekend, and then later on, we started watching videos of you doing like incredible feats of strength, like single legged deadlifts, which I forget what that initial video was. Was that like a 400 pound single legged deadlift or something like that?
Well, it's funny actually, cause Mike was giving his presentation and he pulled up the video.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
And it was me doing single leg deadlifts with 315 for sets of five. And I started laughing, and he looked over and he's like, "What's so funny?" And I said, "Well, that's me in that video there."
That's how it kind of happens sometimes. Yeah, Mike was going into his whole talk on like the bilateral deficit and things like that. And it's like, this is an incredible feat of strength. Like, here, you cannot tell me this person can do whatever it would be, like 630 for five reps, you know, doing a two-legged deadlift. But, I mean, ever since then, you've been obviously doing great stuff in the industry and continuing to post incredible feats of strength, which if people haven't checked out Max's stuff, you got to jump on YouTube and just see it, because it is almost, I don't want to call you names, but it's like a freak of nature, man. Like, it is some incredible feats of strength that don't seem possible because, you're not like a 300-pound power lifter. You know, if you walk into a gym, you're going to kind of mix in with everyone else to a certain extent, but when you start putting weight on the bar, you're moving it better and more than anyone else in there.
Well, gosh, I appreciate you saying that. You're going to make me blush here. But you know what's funny about that is I've been pretty lucky. I've had a lot of good teachers, and the really funny thing is when I first got into training when I was like 18, 19 years old, I was so inflexible and weak that it's still shocking sometimes to track the progress and see how far I've come.
So how old are you now?
I just turned 27.
Oh my god, damn, you're younger than me. Holy shit. All right, so that's the first time I've sworn on this show in like 20 episodes, but I think it's worthwhile. So all right, you started training when you were 18. So what kind of got you to, I'm guessing that was must have been 4 years ago now. So you would have been 23 or 22 in that video. So how did you make such a rapid change? Like, who did you start following? What did you start reading? And what did you start doing to start turning everything around?
Well, you know what's funny is the only reason I got into training actually was so I could make some extra money. Sure. And go to college. Honestly, I signed up to do a personal training job. I interviewed I didn't have a certification. I never really lifted weights. I mean, I played soccer and all I did was run up hills and run long distance and play soccer. So, by the time I stopped that, I couldn't touch my toes and I couldn't do a pull up. I mean, it was just, it was totally pathetic. But anyway, I was the only person who showed up to this job interview wearing a tie and nice clothes. Everyone else showed up in gym shorts. So I got the job, and one of the other people there training just so happens to now be my really good friend, general manager, Mike Baltran, who runs Ambition Athletics in Encinitas. So mm-hmm. he and I have been together for a lot of years now. But basically, I just started bodybuilding. You know, I did biceps day, and I did triceps day, and I did shoulders day, and chest day, and back day. And, you know, I got a little bit stronger, and that was sort of the start, I guess. And then...
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. Then I just kind of played around with a lot of other different things. I got into CrossFit for a while. I did kettlebell training exclusively for a while. I did Olympic lifting for a while. I took my fair run at powerlifting. And, you know, it's just sort of like along the way, I've had a lot of these great teachers that have taught me these little things. And as long as I've been able to retain some of the pieces of what I learned before that were useful, that's, I think, what's allowed me to continue to make progress and not completely break myself.
So, man, yeah, I think you... I've talked to so many people on this show, and that seems to be the trajectory for like a lot of people that get into this stuff, is just kind of like trying everything that pops out and that looks like it could make a difference in your performance and seeing what sticks. And like you said, just making sure that you're moving on to the next thing, but not leaving behind the stuff that worked, carry that along with you and just make sure that you're building on top of that. It sounds like that's what you did.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it was, I realized, and again, I had never really been into training or anything like that, and I was going to school full time and working two jobs, but it's fortunate that I found something that I wanted to do once all the work was done, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like I found myself reading books and watching videos and looking for seminars and workshops to go to. And you know, I realized recently that for me this isn't a hobby. And it's not a job even really. And it's not just my business. It's like, you know, I only hope that everyone can find something that they love doing so much that they do it instead of thinking about nothing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I'll have times where I'll be ready to go to bed or something. And I have an idea and a thought in my head. And then I got to pop up and run over to my living room, which deliberately has like no furniture in it, so I have lots of open space so I can just experiment with whatever I was thinking about. And you know, that's the kind of insanity I kind of think you need.
So you don't have like rings hanging from the ceiling of the living room, do you?
I do have a pull-up bar, actually.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so We're going to be talking about eventually, you know, what you've been working on, and you put together a lot of the stuff that you have been doing in terms of your training into, you know, a manual that people can check out. And like one of the big things that I actually spent the last couple of days going through it and just talking about like the foundations of what you have in that book. And I think it's been coming more to the forefront with things like, all the different movement methodologies that people have out there in terms of moving better. But you know, I thought it was a pretty big deal that you say, like, right off the bat, you know, you need to focus on movement quality above all else. I was hoping you could explain, like, what you mean by that and, you know, where do people start? Like, where do people start when you want them to improve their movement?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've had Ambition Athletics for 5 years now. And whenever I have someone come into the gym, usually 9 times out of 10, they're too inflexible and stiff, and their coordination just isn't so hot because they haven't really continued to develop and cultivate those basic human skills. So I always want to start by teaching someone how to increase their range of motion, of course, but then also improve their coordination in all those different ranges of motion. Because when you start to overload one muscle over all the other ones and you don't have any coordination involved, this, the extreme example would be like using machines. You start to overload certain areas and aspects of the joints and muscles, and that's when you create all this kind of movement dysfunction and eventually injury. But if you evenly spread out the load of that heavy weight training and you stack it on top of a good movement base, it's not only going to result in someone who's stronger, but more athletic, less prone to injury, more resilient to injury, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then as far as that goes, you have to be able to it's kind of like putting you got to walk before you run sort of deal. And I always encourage people to move well under control, add a little bit of load, again, under control. And then after they have like a decent base there, they can start to move quickly. And that's, you know, athleticism is really synonymous with speed in a lot of instances. Mm-hmm. But most people just don't have the foundation to tolerate those forces. I mean, if you look at the force going through the kinetic chain while someone's sprinting, it's between 9 and 15 times your body weight and force going through your joints. And if you don't have a good movement and strength base, you're just going to totally snap yourself.
So let's say I want to give you kind of two examples and see if we can run through, you know, what would be going through your head when they come through the door. First off, like the example you just used a second ago, it is your common everyday general population person that probably is going to be sitting at a desk, you know, 8, 9, 10 hours a day, and then coming into your facility to train. What are the first things that you're going to look at, and then the first things that you're going to do to try to help them move better and start getting them towards, you know, where you want them to be before you start really loading them up?
You know, we used to run everybody through a full FMS, and we used to actually run people through a bunch of Z-Health assessments as well. And it used to actually be a pretty long process. And what we were realizing is that we weren't even really needing to get all of this information because there were so many commonalities with the average person who comes into the gym. It's almost like if you have a math equation, they give you the part at the beginning that's given. Well, I can basically assume that 9 times out of 10, most people are going to be really stiff in their shoulders and thoracic spine. They're going to have poor lat and glute activation, and their hips are going to be tight and usually going to be stuck into some bit of flexion. So now it's a much more basic sort of assessment. You know, we see, can a person do a squat properly? Can someone do a split squat properly? Can someone do a push-up? Can they even attempt to do a pull-up? How do they look on things like the deadlift, for example? You know, can you touch your toes? Really much more basic human movements to just give us a baseline so we can track improvements, not only throughout the first session, but through the long term.
All right. So, you know, that is a common thing that a lot of people out there are doing, or they're using some kind of screen, whether it be an FMS or something that they have put together. But you've kind of found that, you know, you can just kind of get them going into the program, and a lot of that stuff is going to be corrected along the way that you are going to be trying to look at anyways.
You know what the main trick is? And all these people are doing the right thing. It's just that you measure something, honestly. Mm-hmm. Because then you actually have some idea of whether what you're doing is working, whether what you're doing is not working, and at least you have a baseline. So, you know, you're not going to be able to guess what is going to make someone improve every time. You know, we can speculate about why someone's shoulders are tight, but looking at someone's shoulder, you and I have no idea if breathing exercises are going to help that person's shoulder mobility, if a thoracic twist is going to improve that person's shoulder mobility, or a bottom-up kettlebell press is going to improve that person's shoulder mobility. But what we can do is we can try something and make sure we measure before and afterward. And that's the only way we can ensure that we're moving in the right direction.
So for a lot of people that are going to be tuning in and listening to this, they're going to be those folks that have been training for a while. They might have been training for 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years. And I'm sure you're getting these people in as well, people that have either trained on their own or they trained at a facility where, you know, the programming was not super great, or they're obviously left for one reason or another. So what do you kind of look at, or what do you kind of see commonly from these people that are coming in that have maybe been training for a while and potentially not been training in an optimal fashion?
I mean, there's usually just a very obvious lack of balance in the program. And some people will disagree. I think everyone should train like an athlete. You know, before you're a basketball player or a golfer, a tennis player or whatever, you're just a human being who should be able to do basic things like climb on stuff, walk around on your hands, lunge, squat, run, push up, that sort of thing. And when people start changing the emphasis from improving as an athlete, that's when you start to run into problems. Like, for example, what is the purpose of exercise? It's not necessarily improve at this exercise. Like, me saying I want to improve my squat is rather short-sighted in most cases. And unless you really love squatting, which some people do, and believe me, I love to get after it and smash some heavy weights, but the goal should be to improve as an athlete. And where people get stuck is when they try to improve too much into a one-dimensional direction. Think of it like a circle. And you want to expand the circle progressively and evenly around everything. So if you just go full bore into saying, I want to really add more weight to my leg press, you're leaving a lot of other components of athleticism on the table. And I'm not saying you should never leg press again. I'm not saying there are any bad exercises or good exercises. I'm just saying that you should always have the ultimate goal to be a better athlete, to feel better, be stronger, move better, faster, etc. And when you start focusing too much on one thing, you get diminishing marginal returns on becoming that total athlete. For example, taking someone's deadlift from 500 to 600 might yield almost no benefits in terms of overall athleticism. So when you start to over-specialize and overemphasize one or two things, that's when people get injured. That's when, again, you get those diminishing marginal returns on general athleticism and well-being.
Got it. So I guess how would you... let's take a step back. Because another thing that I saw in the book is, at least it's starting at the beginning of the book, were some choice quotes from Bruce Lee. So I got to ask you, what's your influence from Bruce Lee? What do you take away from his writings? And also, I bought a couple of his books, so I haven't started them yet. I just recently bought them before I went to Japan, and then I forgot to bring them. But I was wondering if you have any of his like literature or content that you recommend people checking out, because it seems like it can really carry over to not just like strength and conditioning, but also to how you look at life and stuff.
You know, it's really easy to find a lot of good information, and I'm pretty much a fan of everything he's done. What I will say that he's helped me the most with is he served as a really good example of someone who excelled in a wide variety of disciplines. And again, that's sort of what I try to do for better or for worse. I really just want to be good at everything. And sometimes that's really tough to do. But, you know, Bruce Lee was someone who he really avoided dogmatism and the things that held people held their beliefs a little bit too tightly. One of the best examples I can give was his love of American style boxing. And it's basically a heresy for a martial artist in Asia to consider that boxing might have any practical applications compared to martial arts. But he was so open-minded about everything and so pragmatic. And that's one of the things that I really love about it. He's like, listen, look at these boxers. They've got this awesome jab and this great footwork, and they really know how to move their head well. Much better than the martial artist that I'm working with. He's like, but I'm not going to abandon martial arts just because I see these boxers over here, and I'm not going to marry myself to any one thing. And he has this great quote that says, absorb what is useful and discard what is useless. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what I've tried to do every step of the way, is you avoid getting married to any one thing and you get to enjoy all the benefits of everything. And that's probably the most important thing that I've taken from that, you know, just to watch him excel as an overall well-rounded athlete and, you know, be able to take information from any source and take the pieces that are good and not be emotional about the rest.
Well, emotion in terms of the fitness industry, where when people can, I mean, we see this at, you go to like a Perform Better seminar or wherever, you can see there's definitely certain crowds, whether it be like the CrossFit crowd that totally buys in, or the, you know, the kettlebell crowd that just only does exclusively does kettlebell stuff, or even people that get really, you know, over to the side of movement and rehab. So that is a great quote for this industry, and just seeing what people can sometimes do wrong.
Well, it's funny, you know, I actually went through a phase of that myself. I'm more aware of it now, mm-hmm. but probably when I was about, I want to say when I was like 21 or something, I went through a phase where I would always be interested to hear what people were doing for their workouts. Mm-hmm. And they would usually tell me, and then I would tell them all the things they were doing wrong and what they should be doing differently. Because, you know, everybody loves unsolicited advice. I just remember, like, you know, a person would say, hey, you know, I'm doing Zumba 3 days a week. I love it. It's really fun. And I would be like, oh, well, gosh, you know, you're really leaving a lot of benefits on the table if you're not squatting and deadlifting. And I know they don't do any pull-ups in Zumba either. And have you ever tried kettlebells before too? Yeah, you probably... You know, I wouldn't even bother with Zumba. And, you know, I started saying these things, and looking back, I mean, these people must have just thought, wow, that guy was such a dick.
Well, I think we all were at some point, because, you know, we had more information than the people that we were talking to, or at least we felt like we did. We had the answers that they didn't have, and we wanted to be the one that showed them the light, I guess.
And that's one of the things I really try to convey to new trainers when I go teach certifications now, is like, listen, don't overcoach people and don't shit on when someone else does, as long as they're just getting up off the couch. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I have people at the gym, ladies, who go and do Zumba once a week, and they still come in and they can do 5 chin-ups and deadlift over their body weight with no problem. And the reason they go to Zumba is because it's really fun. It's basically just dancing. You sweat for an hour and you dance with a bunch of other girls in a room. And I don't know if there's a more sustainable exercise program than that, as long as you don't hurt yourself.
That's a great way to put it.
I mean, really, the key, not to cut you off, sorry.
No, go ahead, yeah.
Coming full circle, the most important thing is that you see results and that it's sustainable. And that sustainable component is really what drives everything. You know, the whole 12 weeks to summer six-pack Shredsville program is not sustainable, because no one wants to do 50 minutes of abs and eat 3 almonds every 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Like, it's boring. It's not sustainable. It's not fun. And that fun factor is, at least for me, been a huge awakening in getting people to stick with a plan. Because you can have the best written plan in the world. You can have your deadlifting, your lunging, you can have your handstands and your pull-ups, and you can have all these different components that make like the perfect balanced program in your opinion. But if it's not fun enough for someone to actually do it, then it sucks.
Great point. I was gonna ask you, do you know Tony Gentilcore? Because Shredsville sounds like something he would totally use when talking about stuff.
You know, it's funny. I don't know Tony personally. We've emailed back and forth just a couple times. He actually wrote some really nice things about my new book, but he's a really funny dude, and I do really enjoy his writing.
And he's finally getting married, so he did it.
Good for him.
So let's actually mix it up a little bit. Let's take a question from the audience. We got a question from Mark Thomas on Twitter. He wanted to know how you manage training kettlebells along with one rep max strength, body weight skills, and conditioning.
Okay, so let me answer this in two parts if I can.
Absolutely, yeah.
The first part is that I don't differentiate between equipment. I just differentiate between movement. So whether I'm doing a kettlebell press or a handstand or a ring push-up or a bench press, to me, those are basically all the same. So how I decide to use equipment, they're just tools that can help me get the job done. And it really doesn't matter what that equipment is. And the second thing is, I was actually an econ and Spanish major in college. So all of my training sessions are built around economy of time. So if I can do a kettlebell bottom-up press, I can still do a heavy deadlift and then sprints at the end. So I'm still getting all these different athletic qualities from the same training session. And generally, I'm trying to stick with full body workouts and really appeal to the whole less is more mentality. You can really get away with doing a very low volume of things like deadlifting or jumping or Olympic lifts and still seeing pretty good progress. And in order to get to that next level, like that competition level, it requires a lot more time. But for just the athlete, a little bit can go a long way with most of that stuff.
Very well put. I want to take this second to throw a quick thank you to all of our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/thefitcast. We have just over 100 people that are now supporting the show through the website, and this is the time where I like to just, you know, quickly say thank you to the people out there that are supporting the show. We have, like I said, a little bit over 100, and this week I want to just thank Tim Escher. He's someone who just jumped on recently, donating $1 per episode. So thank you so much, Tim, and of course everyone else that is supporting the show. And like, it does mean a lot for you guys to jump on and show your support for this. And there's always people like, man, there's just so many people that are helping out. So thank you so much. And I hope more people continue to jump on. But I just want to give a quick shout out to our Patreon supporters for this week before we continue. So let's continue to talk a little bit about some of the concepts or your methodologies from the book. And you actually had a really great section just on like mobility drills, you know, a couple that like immediately I want to start, like I was like looking at this at the gym and I just immediately started going out on the turf of my laptop and start trying some of this stuff out. But I was kind of curious, you know, for you, for people that are those sedentary workers, like what are your go-to mobility drills or movements to undo, you know, all that crap that we're doing to our body while we're sitting down all day?
Well, my top two are probably thoracic bridges, mm-hmm. and deep lunges with a rotation. And they're hybrid movements that both incorporate a rotation, both incorporate thoracic mobility, which is, as far as I'm concerned, like the keystone mm-hmm. of your upper and lower body functionality. The thoracic bridge is going to give you glute activation, shoulder mobility, lat activation, that spinal twist, again, hip extension. And then the deep lunge is going to give you hip disassociation, nice hip flexor stretch, that same rotation, and good hip mobility to improve your squatting and lunging. And really, the reason I chose those two, or I would choose those two, is just they have huge bang for your buck. I usually do a little experiment when I teach a course near the beginning. And I have everyone do a squat, do a toe touch, and lift their arms over their head. And then I have everybody do a thoracic bridge or a deep lunge with rotation. And my improvement rate is somewhere between 95 and 99% in a room full of people. Wow. Yeah. And that's instant improvement. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have 35, 40 people measure something. Like I said, I don't care. It can be an overhead squat. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter. Do this drill. Recheck your overhead squat, overhead mobility, toe touch, lunge, whatever. It doesn't matter. And I see time and time again, I get like 90%+ improvement. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. And it's just simple. It's big bang for your buck. It's simple. It's relatively easy to do or easy to modify. And as long as I keep getting those kinds of success rate numbers, I'm going to continue focusing on things like that that I know are going to help the most people.
Yeah.
Because you just can't evaluate every single person.
Totally. I mean, it's kind of one of those things where if you want to go crazy, you can try to do it. But at the end of the day, like, what are you going to mm-hmm. really gain from it? What are you really going to get out of it? Yeah, the thoracic bridge was the one that I actually probably enjoyed the most, just because these days I am sitting at a computer more and on the floor less. So just having the, you know, like, seriously taking 2 minutes to do this, just it gives you that automatic, like, feel better feeling when you start getting up and walking around. So that's even, like, I got a whiteboard next to my desk and I have these reminders on Google calendars, like every 30 minutes when I'm at home, it gets me to stand up and move around, do some stuff. And on the whiteboard, I got 3 movements to do to make sure that I'm, you know, not just turning, you know, aging rapidly while sitting down at a table. So, some super, super good stuff. So how do you, like, implement the warm-up stuff with your programming? Do you like to have people go through, like, you know, like the standard foam rolling, stretching, like dynamic warm-up? Like, what is a warm-up before going into lift look for you?
You know, it kind of depends on logistics and depends on the person. I try to have a warm-up basically satisfy a couple things. I want someone to increase their body temperature. I want them to do some sort of spinal twist every time. I want them to do some sort of glute activation every time. And I want them to do something fast every time. Usually for me, my warm-up bleeds into the rest of the training session. So all those mobility drills are not only going to be done at the beginning, but they're also going to be go right into the power section. So if I'm having someone jump or do Olympic lifts, they're going to pair that up with some sort of mobility drill or activation drill that's going to facilitate those Olympic lifts or jumps. And they're going to continue to be spliced throughout the training session, not only to make sure people take adequate rest between sets, but also to, again, help facilitate the improvement of the exercise they're doing. A good example of that might be if I was going to do handstand push-ups and deadlifts, if I added a thoracic mobility drill after the deadlifts, it's going to help improve my overhead mobility, which is going to make my handstand push-ups better. So it's just a nice, efficient way to organize everything.
And let's talk just in terms of general programming to kind of give people an idea of what, you know, your programs generally look like. I know in the book itself, you mentioned 4 movements that you kind of choose as your go-tos. So I was wondering if you could first talk a little bit about those and why you chose those. And then maybe after that, we can talk just a little bit about what a, you know, like, say if I came to train at your facility, what you would kind of put me through in terms of a program to just simply, like you said, become more athletic.
Whew, this could be a very long answer, my friend.
Yeah.
I did spend a lot of time choosing the 4 main movements in the book. The 4 main movements in the book are front lever, L-sit to handstand, deadlift, and airborne lunge. And they all complement each other really well, and they sort of fill the gaps that might be left by the other 3. I guess I'll start with L-sit to handstand. That movement is arguably the best upper body pushing exercise you can do. So you can take your bench presses, your overhead presses, your dips, all that stuff, and swap that out for L-sit to handstand. And the reason for that is the L-sit to handstand is just such a cool movement that is still accessible to most people. You're taking your body moving it through space. So you get all these deep core muscles firing that frankly just helps make stuff work better. And you're also pushing and supporting through your shoulders, chest, and triceps in a constantly varying vector. So you start out in an L-sit position where you're pushing down away. And then as you pull through, the force is still going straight into the ground, but the angle and the leverage is moving your body to an inverted position. So it's kind of like if you took a protractor and you did, you know, military press, and then you did angled incline press at a really steep angle, and then a little less of an incline press, and then a little less, and then to a bench press, and then to a decline press, and then to a little more decline press, and then all the way to like dips. You're basically getting all of those different angles, and it ends up giving you a very well-balanced strength in that regard. So if, again, you have to choose one, that's the one I would choose. The front lever is like a combination of the world's most difficult straight arm lat pull down and the hardest plank you've ever done that is somehow suspended in midair.
Yeah, I've not tried these before, but they look impossible.
You know, it's funny, and that's probably the funniest part about it is the ultimate goals are very difficult, mm-hmm. but there are progressions that you can use
exactly
at literally any strength or conditioning level. You know, it was funny. I was actually teaching a class. I do still teach classes at the gym, and we have a nice long pull-up bar there. And there were three different people doing front levers on the bar and one actually doing a front lever progression on the floor. And it was four different levels of the front lever by four different people. You know, one person's on the floor at basically level one or level zero. And then I've got one guy on the bar with both legs fully extended doing a full front lever. I've got a girl doing a tuck lever, and then another guy doing a half tuck lever. And one question I get a lot actually when it comes to program design for classes is, do I have an advanced class and a beginner class? And the truth is, I don't. Everyone is still going to follow the same philosophy and ideology that I propose. They're just going to be working on different steps. So it's really applicable to everybody. And it is a long process, even for me, who has a very obvious obsession with movement and strength. It took me a long time to get there, but I like the idea that instead of just adding weight, you're increasing your skill level. And I think that's also sometimes better for goal setting and a little bit more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to quickly mention, going through the book, Max does have progressions for all this stuff. So you're not just like starting, you know, at the final progression. You can actually work your way up to these movements. So it's not something that is unobtainable.
Yeah. So the, I guess to circle back, if I can remember where I was, the front lever and the L-sit to handstand are the two best ways to get a nicely varied range of motion in upper body pushing and pulling strength. They're also very joint friendly, and the front lever is maybe one of the best ways to activate the lats that I've ever seen. It's and I'm sure you've talked about this on the show before, but the lats and the glutes are historically very sleepy muscles. And when you have sleepy lats, it usually leads to some sort of shoulder dysfunction. And if you can emphasize the lats and the glutes anytime you're doing an exercise, you're likely going to see a significant improvement, which is why the front lever has such a strong place in the four movements.
So we'll go even like a little bit more in depth. So outside of these, like what does a general, you know, session look like if I came in to train? Like, you're obviously not going to just do these four movements, you know, 7 days a week. You're going to have some some other work. And I was proud. You got curls in the book. You got me some justification to say, Mike Boyle, you know, Max is a strong ass dude. That's why I'm doing curls today.
You know, it's, programming is very dependent on the person's goals. Mm-hmm. And so let me circle back one step. If I were going to practice shooting free throws at basketball, I wouldn't just practice them for 1 hour on Mondays. I would want to practice them for 10 minutes Monday through Saturday if I could, mm-hmm. because I'm going to get a much better adaptation via the nervous system following the said principle. So I'm always going to do a full body session. The way I look at it is the more times in a year that I can provide a stimulus to the body and the nervous system in one of the main movements, upper push and pull, lower push and pull, I'm going to get a better long-term adaptation. So I'm going to always include some sort of hip hinge. I'm going to always include some sort of upper push and pull. I'm going to always include some sort of squatting movement, whether that's a lunge, an airborne lunge, a squat, or a sled push. It doesn't matter. But every single session, you're always going to do at least those four movements, regardless of what kind of variation I'm doing on them. Usually what a session looks like, to finish the question, is we start with a warm-up, and the warm-up will usually change to help people develop more skills. So sometimes we'll have some sort of hand balancing right there in the warm-up. Sometimes we'll have a lunge matrix in the warm-up. Sometimes we'll have extra eye exercises in the warm-up. Because the truth is, there are so many things you can do, you're never going to have the time to cover all of them. Mm-hmm. So you just change the focus and work on one thing a little bit more this month, work on another thing a little bit more next month. Once you go from that warm-up section, we always do a power section. And again, this is regardless of fitness level. Almost anybody can throw a medicine ball really hard and do some sort of jumping. So we'll pick a power exercise and some sort of either glute activation or mobility exercise to pair it up. We'll do that between two and four sets. The reason we do power in the beginning also is it gets the nervous system lit up to do other things better. Then we'll mix an upper body push and a lower body pull. In the book, this would be an L-sit to handstand variation and the deadlift. And we'll splice in another mobility or activation drill with that. And what we do is we do that for a block of time rather than any specific number of sets, because everyone's going to go at a little bit of a different pace. And the truth is, I don't care how many sets or how many reps a person does. I'm just, again, all about efficiency. I want to dedicate a block of time to how much we're going to work on those things. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just a logistics thing. I'm usually going to dedicate between 15 and 30 minutes to a strength block, depending on the person and depending on what the goal is. Once we're done with that little superset there, that strength block one, we'll move on to strength block two. In strength block two, we'll have an upper pull, a lower push, and another mobility or activation drill. In the book, this is going to be a front lever, an airborne lunge, and some sort of mobility drill again. And again, we'll do that for between 15, 30 minutes, something along those lines. And at the end, you mentioned curls earlier. I do want to leave time for accessory work and conditioning. Mm-hmm. And accessory work, really the only thing missing in the four main movements of the program is some more higher repetition, elbow flexion, knee flexion, that sort of thing, to help condition the joints a little bit better. So I do want to make sure that people understand the importance of maybe doing some high rep push-ups or some high rep rows or something like that to or curls, like we mentioned before, to help condition the joints and sometimes just to give a little extra stimulus to some muscles that might be lagging behind.
Before we go to the last question, I mean, people, like I said, if you haven't, you should really go take a look at the book and kind of see if it's something that's right for you. And to be honest, you know, personally, after going through it, I think it's kind of right for anyone that's listening to this, because, you know, Max's kind of take home point of just, you know, trying to be more athletic, training more like an athlete, you know, depending on where that is in your skill level. But, you know, Max, like where can people check out the book, and, you know, how much does it cost, and, you know, what can they expect, you know, in terms of the contents and stuff like that?
Sure. The website is called ultimateathleticism.com. There are two different options you can get. One is 47, the other is 77. And the reason I did it the way I did, you get the book, which is over 200 pages of relatively small type and not too many pictures, so it was a lot of work. And you get videos that show you all the progressions for all of the movements. So it was actually a beast of a project to get done. And one of the things I did is I actually set up a membership forum. Basically, you get 3 months of free support. And I didn't have to do this, obviously. The last thing I really needed to do was to make more work for myself. But I wanted to make sure that everyone had a really thorough understanding who bought the book. So if you did have a question, and this is really, you know, my first big solo project like this, mm-hmm. and it's been so much time coming that I wanted to make sure that people got as much out of it as completely possible. So I've actually already had a good amount of people asking me some questions on the forum on how to put stuff together better and would this work, would that work. And even though it's a lot more work for me, I'm really enjoying it, and I can see the benefit that people are getting, and I can, you know, maybe help adjust in the future what might need to be changed. You know, again, I'm very proud of the project, but I'm not married to anything, and I might have a different idea in a few years from now. So, just want to do the absolute best I can. If you get the bigger package, I wrote another book called The Simple Shoulder Solution. Mm-hmm. And that was actually really cool. The whole reason I wrote it is like most people who are in this industry, you get emails all the time. And one of the main questions I get is, well, my shoulder hurts. Can I do this? Or what should I do? So I was thinking, like, what can be the, again, most efficient, probably fix the most people, and that's what came of that. So that's another 50-page book with lots of videos to show you all the movements. And it's, in my opinion, simple is probably the most important thing. If it's not simple, it's not useful. Mm-hmm. And I think what a lot of people do is they overcomplicate things just to try to make them sound smart. And I know I went through a phase of that myself, where I told everyone to, you know, really try to open the space in their talocalcaneal joint. And I used to use fancy words like scapulothoracic rhythm. And the truth is that people really don't care about that. They don't care how smart you are. They just care, what can you do for me and how can you help me? And that's what I'm trying to do, is distill everything I know and deliver it in as simple way as possible, in a way that I think will help the most people. And I'm happy to say, I think that's what I managed here.
No, totally. And like I say a lot on the show, I turn down a lot of people that want to come on the show to talk about this stuff. And this is where I actually reached out to Max to talk about, you know, the stuff that's in the book, just because Max has got a great track record of getting people stronger. And the book itself is really well put together. You know, there's, fewer things I would recommend at that price point. You know, you got to really make sure you're getting good quality information, and that you're especially looking towards new goals for 2015, when your goals for all of us should be to be more athletic, to move better, and to train smarter. So I definitely, it's got my stamp of approval. But and we will wrap up with one more question for you. And that was, you know, in the book, you talk about the importance of sprinting and the importance of, you know, having that in your program. So, again, I want to take it back to maybe someone that hasn't done any sprint work in a long time. They might be starting, pretty far back. Probably, let's just say they have no joint pain, no pain while running. But I was kind of curious, how do you like to ramp them up when it comes to getting them to do more sprints, whether it be inside or on hills?
Gosh, I mean, sprinting is probably just the best damn thing you can do for your legs, honestly. In terms of helping the promotion of healthy hormones in your body, like testosterone and growth hormone, and keeping you fast and athletic and flexible, you really just can't beat sprinting. Generally, it's going to be a lot safer to do up a hill because most people injure themselves on the deceleration phase of gait. So when you're sprinting up a hill, it's less of that force going through you and it's more of a strength movement. If you are going to sprint, I think you should not just do it on a hill. You should also practice at some lower intensities on flat ground so you can eventually go full intensity on flat ground as well. Depending on the person, I really just want to make sure that someone can do a split squat. I want to make sure that someone can push the sled rather effectively without having their hips jiggle around like Shakira while they're doing it. And from there, it's pretty straightforward, just get up on the hill and start out at like 20% effort and slowly ramp up. That's really the best way to go. I think sprinting, it's funny, I always change my mind about things and have these funny different ideas. But I had this funny idea the other day that if someone didn't want to ever set foot in a gym, but still find a way to stay relatively healthy, strong, flexible, that sort of thing, I would have them learn how to do some sort of hand balancing, go rock climbing, and do hill sprints. And if they did those three things, it would probably be fun, and they'd probably be pretty strong and athletic.
That's good, good real life, skills to have in case, it hits the fan. So you're going to need to do those things.
It's got to be fun. I mean, if it's not fun, I'm not going to do it.
Exactly. Point blank. Yeah. Totally.
Like I don't care if it's good for me.
No, I hear you.
If it's not fun, I'm not going to do it. And I think the trick is to find ways to make things fun so you'll actually do them. And if you can make it fun and be consistent over the long term, that's the one thing that all great athletes have in common, is that they've been consistent over the long term.
Well, the book is Ultimate Athleticism. Like Max said, you can get it at ultimateathleticism.com. I'll also have a link for it in the show notes where I get a little kickback for the sales. If you want to help support the show, you can do it that way as well. And make sure you are following Max at Max Shank on Twitter. I'll have links for that on there on the show notes and mattshank.com. I keep thinking Nia Shank, so I might have called you like Max Shanks twice, but I'm like, that's a problem with having Nia on the show a couple times, but it's no S at the end, just S-H-A-N-K. I apologize for that, but other than that, people out there, you can make sure that you're grabbing the show via iTunes. You can submit reviews on there, and like I mentioned before, thank you to everyone that's supporting the show through Patreon or through PayPal. You guys are the best, and if you are considering it, that would be a great way to finish off the year to get some more Patreon supporters to make sure the show is going strong into 2015. So, Max, thank you so much for taking the time. I really hope people digest this stuff and think about this and then go in the gym tomorrow and start thinking about how you've actually been training and make sure that you start thinking about how you want to implement some of this stuff into your own programming. And obviously the easiest way to do that is to check out the book for yourself. So like I said, Max, thank you so much for taking the time. Definitely going to have you on back down the road.
Hey, thanks for having me on. And thank you for continuing to have other great people on and providing all this great information to us.
Oh, it's a blast. Do it for the love of the podcasting, I guess. But again, thank you everyone for listening, and we will catch you next time. Take care.